This is an ABC podcast. Resorts, homes and a newly built hospital have been washed away.
I'm just holding on for dear life here. This isn't fun.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Save what for dream.
You must ready.
Helping your community.
Helping your family.
Helping you.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Mula, I'm Josiah Nanunga, based in Fiji.
Hi, I'm Fred Hooper, based in Australia, and this is Pacific Prepared.
It's a show all about natural disasters, climate change, and traditional knowledge, and how these things are all connected. And you'll hear that through stories from right across the Pacific.
Each week we work with local reporters. They're on the ground letting us all know what's happening in this space and what people want to hear about. On today's show, collecting stories about climate change. Who's going to hear them? And why some of these stories could make a huge impact or a huge difference to people right across the Pacific.
And the need to build infrastructure which is climate resilient. And I will be telling you more in the next few minutes. That's all coming up. This is Pacific Prepared.
We need to be prepared for the future.
Helping you stay safe.
We have built a seawall 2 times, but it did no good.
What happens when something goes wrong and how do they respond to it?
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
When you hear a story, the one thing that can make it really interesting and get someone's attention is having it firsthand. A firsthand story can really help to put someone in a place or experience something. And you might have heard, Joe, about the ICJ, the International Court of Justice. They've been calling for submissions.
Right.
Yeah, on the advisory opinion that Vanuatu has put forward. And they've basically been asking people for stories stories from their communities. People have been impacted by climate change. They want to hear what's happening to them, basically.
Yeah.
So the Pacific Island students fighting climate change have been out collecting stories like this in Tongan communities. So their Tongan-based person has been out collecting these stories.
Right.
They've been traveling to really remote communities. So, Joe, just wanted to ask you on that. So you must hear these stories, and you do hear these stories. We know that. You hear these stories all the time. How do you then tell those stories so that people outside the Pacific can actually understand how serious climate change is?
Well, Fred, that is an absolutely, I would say, irrelevant approach. You know, ICJ calling for submission and actually targeting people at the community level, the vulnerable people who are at the forefront, you know, facing or enduring the impacts of climate change daily. That will eventually create a huge impact and a huge difference. Because when we interview, when we gather stories from people at the community level, from the vulnerable people, when they share their stories, when they talanoa, how we put it in Fijian, when they talanoa, it's different. You know, they speak with passion, they speak from experience, and what they usually talk about, the messages or their plight, is real. Because the issue they face, you know, they face it daily, those issues, the climate change issues. For example, the villages or communities that are located along the coastal areas, coastal inundation, coastal flooding, storm surges, saltwater intrusion, and its ripple effects affecting the agricultural productivity. You know, it's interesting. And when they share the stories, we also get to learn and expand our knowledge and understanding based on these issues. I believe that's a very important approach that the ICJ is taking to, you know, calling for submission from people who are actually facing the impacts of climate change at the community level. Good.
And I imagine, Joe, that these sort of stories are so powerful as a journalist, like you, you know, hearing them and telling them.
Right.
That you can probably hear a lot of emotion in the stories too. Is that why they're so sort of personal and powerful?
there will be a lot of emotion. And one point, Fred, that we need to consider is to let them speak in a language or in a manner that they're comfortable with. For example, let them speak in their own language or dialect. You know, when they speak in their own language, when they speak in their own dialect, they will freely open up. Those are the things that, these big institutions or climate movement will be or are on the lookout for, to get, concrete quality information or feedbacks from people at the community level based on what they're facing daily from the impacts of climate change. Yeah,
that makes sense.
And I'm looking forward to the outcome or to the stories that the representative from Tonga that we'll put together over the next few weeks. Yeah,
exactly. And let's just have a listen now to, we're not going to hear the actual stories that have been submitted to the ICJ, but we're going to hear from the person who went out basically to find these stories and to find these submissions for the ICJ. So that's what we're going
to
hear.
Oh, I'd love to hear that. Yeah.
This is Siwa VR Kune from Pacific Island Students Fighting Climate Change. He's based in Tonga and he's been out collecting these stories from the vulnerable communities.
Chauvin. Okay. So thanks again for this. My name is Siwa Vekune, or Siwa. I am currently a campaigner with Pacific Island Students Fighting Climate Change. I've held this role for about a year and a half now, but I've been with the organization Pacific Island Students Fighting Climate Change since 2019. So March 22nd was the deadline for states and international orgs to make their written submissions before the court. And that was basically just these institutions interpreting the legal question for themselves. What do these concepts mean to them, these concepts of intergenerational equity, human rights, and how do we address the climate crisis via these concepts? And that's what the March 22nd deadline was all about, just these states bringing their views, their perspectives, and hopefully the perspectives of their frontline communities.
And I know we don't know specifics. You said it's quite closed off to the public, but do you know sort of roughly what these submissions might look like? Is this kind of countries putting forward arguments or maybe offering up sort of case studies from their countries to say, look, this is what's happening in our country? And is that sort of roughly what's happening at the moment?
Yeah, I guess that is the general gist of things. There has been a lot of campaigning, especially from civil societies, for countries to include not just very progressive legal arguments and scientific evidence, but also to include the voices of the people, like genuinely having, as you mentioned, like case studies or like testimonies. And basically the role of these testimonies are just to ground a lot of these arguments and evidence in the realities or like first-hand experiences.
Yeah,
and we are aware of a few countries that have taken on board, that have onboarded this idea of allowing testimonies to be included or at least referenced in their legal arguments.
I was just going to ask as well, do you know what sort of weight testimonies carry over scientific evidence, or like is one better than the other, or is it sort of good to have a mixture?
It's definitely the recommended approach is to have both, because you could have as much scientific evidence, and I speak about this especially from the context of the Global South, you could have so much scientific evidence, but you'd also have to keep in mind that that can only go as far as painting a picture in the headspace of these judges. And that's what, I guess, these testimonies do. That's what these testimonies provide, is the appropriate amount of context needed just so that you could relate scientific evidence or legal arguments to firsthand experiences. And that's what the testimonies, I think, do best, better than either the scientific evidence or legal arguments, is provided very much needed context, especially from Global South countries that don't necessarily have a lot of run-ins with the ICG. That's what these testimonies do. So, yeah, just context.
And whereabouts have the testimonies actually come from? Are these things that, you know, do people send these in to organizations like yourself to then hand on to the ICJ process? Or where do they come from? Are people visiting villages to try and record or capture these stories somehow?
So we did have our hand in a few of these written submissions, and they were just to provide these witness statements, as we've called them. And it very much how you explained it. It was a lot of, I do want to also add that it does show the willingness of certain governments to work with their civil societies and work with their youths and young people, especially in this written submissions phase. They did take a chance on non-governmental organizations collecting these witness statements, and the approach taken was basically just requesting that ministries make known frontline communities the worst of the worst cases, and then it would be PSFCC's role was to then travel to these frontline communities and then speak to them. We'd have pre-prepared questions that often at times would just go off because we weren't prepared for the realities of these experiences.
What's your plan? Are you ready to leave your home? Plan now before disaster strikes. Pacific Prepared.
If you've just joined in, thanks for listening to Pacific Prepared. And we are currently listening or hearing from Siwa Viakune from the Pacific Island Students Fighting Climate Change based in the Kingdom of Tonga.
What sort of things have people been saying to you when you've been asking them about their communities? They might be living in vulnerable communities. They might be young people who are trying to do something for the future. What have they been saying to you about this entire process and what it's like to, I guess, be heard, essentially?
Well, one of the biggest things that's always become like a talking point for us is because we've had some, core values that we've maintained since the early days of the campaign. And a lot of the discussion is around how do you maintain these concepts, especially concepts that are often challenged at the international stage, concepts of intergenerational equity or concepts like human rights. How do you address the climate crisis with human rights? And it's that sort of discussion point that comes up a lot. The general public having difficulty understanding how those two concepts meld. And we've always preached about it because it was a genuine belief of this, of the organization and the initiative, that by using human rights in addressing the climate crisis, you are firstly generally bringing people to the core of the solution. And second to that, human rights international law has a wider range of solutions, quote unquote. They have a wider range of solutions rather than climate law, which is a bit more focused and not as far reaching. And it's always, that's always a good discussion point. It's about, funnily enough, always brought up by youth and young people. And it goes to show that these are concepts that are shared universally and not necessarily something that just because it started from the Pacific, it's only it only shows there. But this discussion point being brought up in several regions that we've been in just goes to show that the goal is shared and not just it goes to show that the goal is shared, and it's just how we get there that's often different.
Well, and that's the thing too. I was going to ask you about that sort of, journey that you've had with this as well, because it's been going on for, well, I think around 5 years now, maybe 6 years. Are people sort of at all frustrated by the length of time that something like this does take to happen?
I guess some of the frustration is based on that, starting back in 2019, it was a difficult start, especially since this initiative has its roots in a classroom and from youth. Obviously, the kickoff point would be very difficult. Does it bring frustration from our audience every now and then? Yes, it does. And understandably, of course, that there is a lot of, eager parties that are hoping for this to, are hoping for a very progressive advisory opinion and its end game. And the fact that it's taken us this long is very frustrating, I guess. But we are reassured by the several successes of this campaign that we are genuinely headed in the right direction, no matter how long it takes. We're coming up on 5 years this July. But that point of frustration is well-placed, we believe, only because, there's a lot riding on the potential success of this campaign.
And what about you personally, Siwa? How do you feel being part of this campaign?
I feel exhausted. this campaign is, I guess for lack of a better word, it's been a blessing. For me personally, to have an active hand in contributing to something of this magnitude, it's a bit dramatic, but it's
probably not dramatic. I mean, it is a big thing.
Yeah, I guess so. To have an active hand in this campaign is something I am extremely proud to be a part of. This campaign has been a much needed eye opener. Because, like, I'm born and raised in Tonga. You hear about climate change and climate crisis, sure. But to genuinely be aware of what's really going on in these frontline communities, because Tonga is fine. Tonga's not fine. Like, I live on the main island, and when we gave the testimony collections, I got to go out and speak to the actual frontline communities, people that live off the ocean and coastal erosion, sea level rise, like these people experience it on their day-to-day. Like, they genuinely can say that. And it's been such an eye-opener on how, like, even though you can go up in the islands, but you could never have this sort of experience. And it's something I guess I've treasured since that witness statement collection.
Disaster is part of our life, and recovering is also part of our life.
As you see, they're smiling despite the devastation. That's how we are.
You are listening to Pacific Prepare.
Whereabouts did you go in Tonga, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, yeah, sure thing. We were in, well, we got directions from, like I mentioned earlier, we had to ask Climate Change Department for recommendations of where we should go, like where, which
most
island.
Vulnerable communities are.
Yeah, exactly. And it was Hapai. They sent us out there.
Which are sort of the islands that are north of Tonga, right?
They're like a 16-hour boat ride from the mainland. And it was, it's funny because it was myself and another member of the PSFCC that went. And so we went there, we collected testimonies, and then we drafted them. And then we got on the boat, and on our way back, we sort of were missing a sense of accomplishment, mostly because... We walked away with the understanding that these testimonies, yes, they're powerful, and yes, they've said so much about the realities, but if this advisory opinion amounts to any success, none of these people will get to see it. And that was just a very daunting realization, I guess, we had.
Did you say that none of them will get to see it?
Yeah, in the sense that if this advisory opinion is progressive and it reaps so much success, and let's say all emissions stop by next year, we don't get to see the benefits of that emission cut in the next 20 to 30 years. And just the science of it all. So that was just something very chilling, I guess.
That is an amazing thing to think about, really, and quite daunting, like you said, too.
Yeah, it was. Especially since a few of these guys were elders, and you get to hear them speak about, not to let off too much about Thomas' submission, but they got to speak about just how they've observed, like, year by year, every other 2 years, the walk to the sea is right. gets shorter. You know, it's it's very daunting. That's a good word.
Siwa Viakune from Pacific Island Students Fighting Climate Change based in Tonga, just telling us how he was out and about in those vulnerable communities in Tonga collecting those stories for the International Court of Justice.
I'm just holding on for dear life here.
For women, it's always safety first. They are the first responder.
You're listening to Pacific Prepared.
Fred, last week, 3rd April, was a very important date in our calendar, especially for people who, you know, deal with climate-related work, which was the International Meteorological Services Day. And I'm pleased to note that the Fiji government prioritized the day, and the minister set aside this day to visit the Fiji Met Office, based in Nandi, Fiji Islands, just to have an event and at the same time acknowledge the tremendous effort the officers or the weather people have been doing, the hard yards, especially over the past few weeks, over the past few months with the frequent rainfall, and for them,
and it is cyclone season too, I suppose.
Sacrificing their time and especially family time just to ensure that quality, reliable and accurate weather bulletin, weather information were disseminated to the people, especially for those who reside in flood-prone areas. And, you know, when during the ceremony or the occasion last week, he highlighted some key points. I believe that's very important as well for people in the Pacific about the need to have a good plan, especially if you're planning to build a house, especially for the younger generation. If you're planning to build a house, the need to build an infrastructure which is climate resilient. That's very true. That's very
Yeah, cool. Definitely something that a lot of Pacific Islanders probably got to have to think about now, right?
Yeah. Especially when, you know, for the number of the damage occurred in recent tropical cyclones, a good number of houses were destroyed. And a survey or a study was conducted, and it concluded that the reason why those houses were destroyed were mainly due to the fact that the structure or the way they built it was not climate resilient.
Oh, right.
Or at least to withstand the intensity of a category 2 or category 3 tropical cyclone. It takes a collective support, collective effort from both the government and the people in order to achieve the desire or the dream that the minister, Rofilipe Tuisomo,
highlighted. Yeah, everyone's got to be on the same page, right?
Yeah. Well, let's listen to his comments during the special day last week.
Fiji is a small island state, as most of you know. The impact of climate change is very significant on small island states. So Fiji with other small island states are working together on mitigation. We've been to a few meetings. You've heard of the COP meetings. That's where the negotiations are made to mitigate, and also looking at how the emitting nations, those who emit greenhouse gases, will compensate us, because they are the culprits and we are facing the consequences. We are not immune to the devastating effects. We've seen that in the last, so many years, just recently, and also with the warnings from our very important office here regarding, is it the El Nino, El Nino. So the variations in rainfall, atmospheric temperatures, etc., which can cause extreme weather, not only floods but also cyclones. But we have to be resilient and be determined. and also strengthen our defenses, not only from the government side, but also the communities and also as individuals, as families. I've always stressed that at the end of the day, it's how you prepare yourself. Do not be dependent on government. Government can only do that so much, but not everything. So that is one of the key messages we are advising the communities, especially in terms of essential services such as water. So you have to have your backup plan. There will always be issues coming up regarding disruptions to essential services from extreme weather. We've seen that even in developed countries such as the US, Australia, even in Europe, when there's extreme weather, you can't do anything. So what we need to do is prepare. So climate change is about not only environment but also social and economic. When that happens, it impacts across. You all understand, the economic side, social, even school students. Last week, they couldn't get to school. So I suppose it's how we plan and prepare. So as an incoming government, it is quite a task to look at the infrastructure and generally in terms of how we prepare for extreme weather and how we have to make sure that not only in relation to sustaining our energy, looking at renewable energy, but also the word resilience comes in. Resilience infrastructure. How do you build resilient infrastructure? So that's very, very important, and that's something we need to look into as a nation moving forward in terms of planning and budgeting. So for me, coming in as a minister, that is a huge, huge challenge.
And that was Fiji's Minister for Public Works and Meteorological Services and Transport, Rofilipe Tuisawau, during the World Meteorological Day. Well, thanks for listening in to Pacific Prepared. We do hope that you've learned something from the content we've put together this week. And don't worry, next week we will come up with more interesting and informative content based on climate change, disaster preparedness, and traditional knowledge. Until then, Fred, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Joe.
And thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Vinaka, see you next week.
Catch you next week.
This show was made on the lands of the peoples of Stony Creek Nation in Lutruwita, Tasmania. Also the people of the Vanua Uviti. Pacific Prepared is supported with funding from the Australian Government's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Any views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the Australian Government. It's produced and distributed in partnership with Radio Australia and networks across the Pacific, including Radio New Zealand Pacific, National Broadcasting Corporation of Papua New Guinea, Palau Wave Radio, Fijian Broadcasting Corporation, Samoa National Radio 2AP, Solomon Islands Broadcasting Corporation, and Tonga Broadcasting Commission. My name's Fred Hooper, and thanks to my co-host in Fiji, Josiah Nanunga. Please share any information you've learned today, and stay safe. This has been Pacific Prepared.